You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in. It is Anita Marks here on 98.7 ESPN in for Carlin tonight and tomorrow. Has pretty much been in for Carlin the last few weeks. Musical chairs is a number of people are on vacation. All good. Let's kick it off with the story that just broke momentarily from the Washington Post. Andy Polin is going to join us this hour. He hosts Sports Talk Radio in the D.C. area for ESPN. So we can even dive even further into this story. But, you know, this is something that a number of us in the media have been anticipating that it was going to drop for some time now. And so what the report is that 15 women allege sexual misconduct by former Washington employees. So obviously Dan Snyder is the owner of the Washington team. Of course, we don't call them the Redskins anymore. We're waiting to find out what we are going to call them, whether it's the Red Wolves or the Red Tails or the Warriors, whatever the case may be. So, but just to kind of give you a backstory on this, Jeff Bezos, who bought the Washington Post, $250 million, you know him, you know, the Amazon dude. This is something when the Me Too movement really first hit and was prevalent, and Harvey Weinstein and a number of, as we know, big Hollywood executives were being called out, and Matt Lauer and a number of people being fired. Jeff really put a lot of money behind this investigating team with the Washington Post, and said, listen, go out and do your due diligence. You know, uncover every rock, any lead you have, go for it. So this story and this report has been something that a number of us in the media have known that this investigation has been going on for quite a while now. And last night, reports were it was going to, like, well, actually not last night, reports were this was going to drop on Tuesday, and then it didn't. And then reports where it was going to drop at some point in time last night, and it didn't. And then reports where it was going to drop sometime today, and sure enough, it just did. So just to kind of give you some back history on this, this is something that the Post has been working on for a long time now, for like over a year, okay? So I'm just, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read, this was just posted to ESPN.com. 15 women who previously worked for the Washington Redskins organization have alleged sexual harassment and verbal abuse by former scouts and members of owner Dan Snyder's inner circle, the Washington Post reported today. Among those accused of misconduct are former director of pro personnel Alex Santos and former assistant director of pro personnel Richard Mann II, as well as radio play-by-play announcer Larry Michael, who Larry Michael is actually a very dear friend of mine. All three departed the organization within the past week. There are no allegations against Snyder or former longtime general manager Bruce Allen, who was fired last December after 10 years with the franchise. Snyder declined several requests for an interview, according to the Post. Allen also did not reply to interview requests. The NFL has not yet responded to an ESPN request for comment. Quote unquote, the Washington Redskins football team takes issues of employee conduct seriously, the team said in a statement to the Post. While we do not speak to specific employee situations publicly, when all new allegations of conduct are brought forward, they are contrary to these policies, we address them promptly. In a text to ESPN's John Keim, first-year Washington coach Ron Rivera said that the culture within the organization would change moving forward. Keep in mind, and this is me speaking, Ron Rivera was just hired recently this season. Back to the article. Quote unquote, biggest thing in this is that we have to move forward from this and make sure everybody understands that we have policies that we will follow and that we have an open door policy with no retribution, Rivera said. Plus, my daughter works for the team, and I assure you as hell, I am not going to allow any of this. Well, good for you, Ron. The team has hired D.C. attorney Beth Wilkinson of Wilkinson Walsh LLP to review the organization's protocols, including its culture, policies, and allegations of workplace misconduct. Wilkinson confirmed in a statement on Thursday. She represented the NFL in a suit challenging the league's Sunday ticket package, and also has successfully represented the NCAA in Major League Baseball in class action suits. She also assisted the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh during his confirmation process and addressing allegations of sexual misconduct. It's been reported that three minority shareholders are seeking to sell their interest in the team. The minority shareholders have hired the investigation bank of Moog and Company to look for buyers and sell their stake in the team, a league source told Scheffler. The allegations come on the heels of the team's announcement Monday that it would be retiring its nickname and logo after completing a thorough review that began on July 3rd. So this is what is being posted right now. And again, just further review of the Washington Post article that was released. It's 15 women alleging sexual harassment by, again, former scouts and a number of guys within Dan Snyder's inner circle. Applegate seems to be the one that is on the record. The other 14 women are off the record. Apparently, they had to sign non-disclosure agreements, so they're worried about getting sued. These allegations took place between the years of 2006 to 2019. Situations such as women were asked or forced to flirt with certain clients or wear provocative clothing so that they could, quote unquote, close deals with sponsors. So that's where it stands right now. Now, again, prior to this coming out today, in all honesty, the expectation is that this report would be a lot worse. The expectation was that there'd be a lot more damaging information that that would be reported. So now there is speculation that the Post has more information that could be revealed at a later time that could be more damaging. But this is damaging to begin with. Damaging to the point where, and again, in speculation, prior to this article and this report, as we like to call it, dropping today, allegations that would absolutely 100% force the NFL and owners to force the hand of Dan Snyder to sell the Washington team. Listen, this is very similar, I believe, based on the report as it stands right now. This is very similar to me, the report that we saw in regard to Mark Cuban and his staff with the Dallas Mavericks. And he's still owner of that team. The NBA did not force him out. Obviously, Dan Snyder getting ahead of the story and hiring D.C. attorney Beth Wilkinson to review the organization's protocols in regard to culture, policies, allegations, workplace misconduct. Obviously, him getting ahead of the story was a smart move and a good move. So, you know, as this story stands right now, do I see the NFL and NFL owners forcing Dan Snyder to sell the team? No, I don't. But again, there's been in the last 24 to 48 hours, speculation that this story and certain situations, that these women were put into could have been a lot severe and a lot more serious and a lot more damaging. That could have been the case. And who knows if there's more information that will be revealed at a later date. You know, obviously a story of this magnitude and the seriousness in this the Washington Post, any publication obviously wants to cross their T's and dot their I's and make sure that, you know, they have more than just a few sources. So, you know, what happens now? It's a great question. Again, Andy Pollin is going to join us. He hosts Sports Talk Radio for ESPN in D.C., obviously closer to the story than any of us are here in New York. Also, Bram Weinstein, who's a very dear friend of mine, is going to join us on the show as well at 8:30 tonight. So obviously this story will be front and center tonight. And as you can hear, I'm broadcasting from the living room of my apartment. And that is, that's my oldest girl, Suki, who's saying hello to a neighbor who's, obviously walking up the stairs right now. Suki mama. So I'm going to take a quick break. 800-919-3776. I'd love to take your calls on this. Your thoughts on this report. Again, I don't, the talk and speculation, and I hate to say the word hype. I mean, when I use the word hype to me is something that's in a positive connotation, right? Oh man, that hype, like I'm so hyped. This is all negative. I just seem like the past week in regard to this Washington team, in regard to its nickname and that being changed, and now this, just a lot of negativity out there. But again, the talk and the speculation was that this report, this article, this investigation was going to be so damaging that it would force Dan Snyder to sell the team. I'm curious, Washington fans out there, as horrible of a question as this is, are you disappointed that it's not more damaging because you just want Dan gone? You want Dan Snyder gone. I mean, that's what's trending right now on social media. You know, prior to me coming on the show, I'm on Twitter. I'm reading all the comments and you know, it's this world we live in, right? More disappointment from Washington fans, and not necessarily on the behavior of the franchise, but more so that the report isn't more damaging, that the other 31 plus NFL owners aren't going to force the hand of Dan Snyder to get the hell out of Dodge.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Women employees said the first few weeks at Redskins Park also often came with an informal but invaluable orientation administered privately by a veteran female employee who warned them to avoid certain placed areas, people and places, such as a staircase near the entrance of the team headquarters, lined at the top with a transparent plexiglass. The stairs from the lobby to the locker room and training area, and someone standing at the bottom could look up the skirt of a woman standing at the top. One former female member of the executive staff learned this lesson early in her tenure. She said when she looked down to see a male trainer two floors down staring right back up, walking step by step with her. He even leaned over to get a better angle, the woman said. He wasn't even trying to hide it. Without further ado, Andy Pollin joins us. He hosts Sports Talk Radio in the D.C. area for ESPN. Andy, welcome in. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Anita?
I'm all right. I'm doing all right. A few things. First and foremost, what your reaction to the Washington Post article? A number of us obviously were expecting the last 24 to 48 hours, but again, it just posted about an hour ago. Your first reaction after reading it?
Sickening. You know, it was odd the way this rolled out, and you referenced this. There were tweets about this as of Sunday night that this was coming, and as of last night, it really ramped up. And there were reporters, some of whom still cover the team for other outlets, who said, oh, my, I've seen what's happening here, and this is going to be a bombshell, and, you know, let's wait and see what happens here. And then it's put out by the Washington Post. I've really never seen reporters who had a story and didn't want to go with it. Now I see the depth of it, and it's 15 women who have complained about sexual harassment at Redskins Park over the years. So I understand it. And there's legalities with all of this, and it involves a number of former team employees. And the question is, you know, now what happens with the owner, Dan Snyder, who in the story, it says did not necessarily involve himself directly with sexual harassment of any of the female employees, but this is his shop. He's responsible for what goes on there, and this is just another disgusting chapter in what has been an awful 21 years of ownership for Dan Snyder.
Absolutely. Here's the thing, Andy. We've all kind of anticipated. I played golf today. I felt like every tee box I was on, I was like looking on my phone, looking at Twitter to see if the story had broken yet. You know, we were all anticipating this to happen. Once it did, post, the response was, oh, not as damaging as I thought it would be. And there is some sense of disappointment because I think that there was some hope that it would be like epically damaging to the point that owners in the NFL would force Dan Snyder to sell the team. I look at this, and this to me is very similar to what Mark Cuban was accused of with the Dallas Mavericks, and he's still owner of the Mavs. I'm curious, do you think that the end result here will be Dan Snyder no longer owning the Reds, the Washington team? Of course, we no longer call them the Redskins.
Yeah, I'm not an attorney. My daughter is. I had a conversation with her a while ago. She says no, she does not think it will lead to this. But there are other things at play here. There are three minority partners who own 40% of the team, Dwight Schar, Fred Smith, and Robert Rothman. And they have reportedly gotten together with a group to try to sell their shares. They want to distance themselves from Dan Snyder. Dwight Schar is a very close friend of Joe Gibbs, the most legendary figure in the history of the franchise. And I would imagine if Schar wants out, that fractures the relationship with Gibbs, which has been the only really shining light of Snyder's ownership. That's the one really good move that he made, was to convince him to come back in 2004, and he stayed for 4 years. It'd be interesting to see if Schar gets out, if Joe Gibbs decides to divorce himself from the franchise, and Snyder, who has lost and fired many people who have worked for him over the years, is kind of left there out on his own. Now, I did just notice something on Twitter. John Keim, who's been covering the team for a long time, over 20 years, and covers them for ESPN, has gotten in touch with Ron Rivera, who is, at the moment, the only one who speaks publicly for the franchise. Snyder never does interviews, never does press conferences, and has not said anything that I know of within the last, well, certainly since he hired Rivera. That's the last time I saw him speak publicly, which was in January. And Rivera said, we're not going to have this. I have a daughter who works for the team. So it looks like part of the strategy moving forward is Rivera will speak for everybody else. They've also hired an attorney, according to reports, who I guess will be examining this. Her name is Beth Wilkinson, and she will come up and say, here's what you're doing wrong, and here's what was done wrong, and here's what you need to do moving forward. So that now appears to be the two-headed monster of damage control. Now, Beth Wilkinson, the attorney, and Ron Rivera, the coach.
Interesting. Andy Pollin joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. There's also some talk and speculation that the reason that this article took so long to post after we were so much anticipation that it would even be getting on Tuesday is because there's still more damning information that has not been reported yet. And I guess they're fact checking or crossing their T's, dotting their I's. Are you hearing anything in that regard, that there's more to follow here, Andy?
Not that I personally know of, just what I read on Twitter. And there are various things, some involving bribes and drugs and things like that. But I don't have any substantiation for that. This is kind of the wild, wild west world that we live in now with Twitter, where any of these things can be put out. But it does look like this is a very comprehensive report, and they did take their time in putting it out. So if there is more to come, I would be surprised. But I guess that's entirely possible.
Before we let you go, curious to get your thoughts as well on the name change. From the discussions I've had with a few other people in Washington, I know Warriors was trademarked about 10 years ago. And then there's some other names out there that a trademark squatter has been able to attain. And that's the Red Wolves and Red Tails. Any update, any news in regard to the nickname?
You see the various betting favorites. One of the things that Ron Rivera said was that they wanted to honor Native Americans and also honor the military. It's also been reported that the logo will not have any Native American symbols on it. I suppose if they want to have warriors, they could go with some type of a military look, although it would be hard to get away, especially if you're going to keep the colors, from the Native American imagery. It's funny, I had Kevin Blackistone from Around the Horn on my show today, and he said that they need to stay away from anything that represents a person. And the red tails, of course, represent the Tuskegee Airmen of World War II. And, you know, you've had now this offensive mascot for 87 years, and it's probably time to get on to something else. He made mention of the Miami Heat, and if you've ever been in Washington in the summer, I guess humidity would fit. So maybe that's what we're going to wind up with here.
Andy, thanks for your time this evening. Appreciate it.
All right, Nina. Take care.
You got it. We'll get back to your calls. 800-919-3776. I know our first caller, Ed, irritated a number of people, including myself. Josh, Dan, Leo, Sam. Is it Jelani, I believe it is, in Putnam County? We'll get to all of you when we get back. 800-919-3776. Anita Markson for Chris Carlin tonight, talking about the Washington Post article that just posted about, 2 hours ago.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Carl Francis, a good friend of mine and part of the NFLPA, joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. First and foremost, Carl, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, my friend. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Glad to hear your voice. So, you know, where does it stand right now in regard to the conversations and should we call them negotiations between the NFL and NFLPA?
Sure. Yes,
to make sure that everybody's on the same page, everybody is in agreement, and players will feel safe and confident reporting to camp at the end of the month, Carl.
Yes, and you're right. It is a negotiation, and every day we meet and we talk to players, our medical experts, and everyone affiliated in the health space that can support us and assist us with figuring out the best way for our members to return to work, and that's important. And so we've had these discussions. We've had a number of player calls. We've heard from our players on a number of occasions, and the concerns are very real, and they are things that we're taking seriously. So absolutely, there's discussions back and forth, but hopefully we can get to where we need to be. But until then, we'll just keep working through them.
All right. I mean, and I think from what I understand, the biggest concern is if COVID-19 will be considered a non-football injury. If you can kind of explain to our listeners the significance in that, in covering and making sure that the players, if they do show up to camp and they're participating, and God forbid, because it's not about if, it's when one of them does contract COVID-19, how they will be covered and how they will be safe. Explain the importance of it being, it not being a non-football injury.
Absolutely. And that's a part of the overall negotiations that we're going through with the NFL, is to those sort of items. And that's important because players are concerned that, if they contract while playing, how are they covered? And if they are required to sit out, how would that be considered? And so if a player were to test positive while in the so-called bubble of training camp, how would that be viewed if he has to sit out a certain number of games, certain number of days, and how would that impact him moving forward? So clause is a part of a larger conversation that we have on a number of different occasions that we're trying to come to an agreement on.
And just so our listeners understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Carl, right? Like, so let's just say, hypothetically speaking, training camp opens up July 28th, the end of the month, right? And let's say 3 days later, a player comes down with COVID-19 and team could cut him. Now, let's say that player, now, you know, we've been hearing a lot of reports of NBA players, NHL players, Major League Baseball players. Even a report came out today, right? 72 NFL players have tested positive. But it doesn't seem like we're not hearing the reports that any of them are, you know, in a serious situation in the hospital with some type of breathing apparatus. Like, we're not hearing that. Right. But God forbid that happens. And let's say a player loses lung capacity and can never play in the NFL again. That player is not covered. So that, I mean, so really that's what we're talking about. Like, and I get it. If a player is saying, hey, listen, I'm going to show up to training camp. I know that there's no guarantee that I'm going to be on your final roster come regular season week one. But I want to make sure that if I show up and I participate and I'm, you know, competing for a roster spot, if I do contract COVID-19, I want to make sure that I'm cared for and I'm safe for the rest of my life. If I lose any type of lung capacity, heart situation, we don't know. We don't know a lot about this virus.
And that is why we have not come to an agreement, Anita, to that very point, because those are one of the major topics that we're discussing. And we are fighting for them to be covered. And we foresee them being covered because this is a very serious area that we're in, because as you mentioned, everybody's making a tremendous sacrifice. People talk about owners making a financial sacrifice, but I think this is a little larger because this impacts your health and your family's health. So that's one of the areas that we're focusing on, is protections, key protections and safety precautions that are in place that can give players as much security and safety as we can, you know, provide in terms of their working conditions going back to our training camp.
You know, another thing, and J.J. Watt, by the way, has been, I think, one of the most vocal players, Carl.
Yeah.
Especially on social media. And he posted, here's what we know and don't know. This is, and I'm assuming you saw this post today, because I know you're active on social media. We want to play. We want to be as safe as possible. We have not received a single valid infectious disease emergency response plan from any team or league. We don't know if there's a preseason. We don't know if there are going to be preseason games or not. Again, the players in the NFLPA, they want zero. The owners want two. Which, by the way, Carl, I think that's ridiculous. Why are you going to risk, you know, player safety for COVID-19 for games that don't matter? I understand
I
that it all.
Yep.
I know it comes down to money, but I just think that's ridiculous. We don't know if there's going to be daily testing, semi-daily testing. What's that about? Is this money in regard to how much it costs for tests? Is it the number of tests that could be made available to the NFL? Why would the NFL want to test every day, Carl?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that's one that's reserved for the NFL, and we would like to test. And another thing we got to be mindful of is that we are part of our communities, right? I mean, you look at different states. What I saw a report today that 41 states are cases are rising in 41 states across the country, and in the hot spots, which are what, California and Florida, Texas and Arizona, we have several NFL teams in each state. And so, you know, we're there, we're participating, and you have these different pockets of the state that need testing. And so why would we jeopardize our players in those particular areas, was trying to force them to come back if the right measures and protocols are not in place to support them? And so that's very key. And we would like for the guys to be tested so they can, that they can feel comfortable, so they can know that, you know, they're being protected. But, you know, I don't know. You got to ask the league about that one, to be honest with you.
Carl Francis joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Carl, in talking to a number of players, a number of agents, majority of them feel that we're not going to have a season.
Okay.
I know that's you know, doom and gloom. I don't, you know how much, Carl, you know how much I love this game. You know, I love this sport. I'd be devastated. But you know, what's your gut telling you, Carl?
I can't go with the guts, because I'm too deep in the weeds of trying to figure out how to protect our players. I don't know. And we have to approach this through phases. Like, we're not even in season mode yet. We're into just reporting to camp, trying to make sure that they can get to camp first. And if that's not possible, then obviously that's going to impact the season. But I know one thing that's important for us. We're not in a rush to put our players in a non-safe environment. That is what I know and I can report here very clearly. So we're not in a rush to move the season forward, particularly more so training camp, if these precautions are not taken seriously by the NFL. And so that's what the NFLPA, that's what we're working very, very hard for right now.
And it's less than 2 weeks away.
I know. Yep. And we're still there. We're still, trying to, turn the lever, trying to make sure that players are hurt. And the one thing I love about our players, despite what people may think, what people may say, you look at, things that J.J. Watt has posted, has tweeted. Our players are very, very thought-provoking, very smart-thinking individuals. And so they're no different than a parent who's wondering whether there's going to be school in the fall. Like, they have to think about that, too, because they have children, right? I mean, our membership is a part of communities that are concerned about everyday life. So now you have football that's tagged onto, which makes it a little bit more difficult. And I feel as though that's our job to kind of help them do that. And so we're going to do everything possible to make sure that if they do report, that there is the safest environment as possible.
Last thing before I let you go. In regard to the players, what are they voicing to you? What's their major concern? Where are they mentally? Where are they emotionally, Carl?
You know what? They're concerned, as well as they should. They're wondering, what are the risks? What precautions will be taken once they get in camp, and if someone is found to have contracted the COVID, then what's the next steps, and how do we track, trace, and quarantine? What's the quarantine measure? If I were to get sick, what happens to it? What happens to my family? I mean, there's so many which are really, really, really good questions. And we're working through every one of them. And so emotionally, anxiety is high because a number of our players are parents, and they're husbands. And they want to make sure that these measures are put in place to protect their families, because they have to go home in the evening as well. And so they want to make sure that everything is safe, and it's safe enough for them to go back and they feel comfortable. So, I mean, they're concerned, and they should be. I mean, but on the flip side of it, they're professional football players. This is what they've been doing their entire life, right? And they love it. And they play it for the love of it, and it's their job. So, of course, they want to play. But, like I said, they're part of our everyday community, so they're just as concerned as the average person that has questions and want to get answers.
Carl, thanks for spending some time with us this evening. I know it's late, and I know how hard you work, and I really do appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Anytime. Have a good night.
You got it. Carl Francis, part of the NFLPA. You know. Sometimes I think we forget, right, that like athletes are people too. I played golf today at Forest Hills, and first of all, the place is unbelievable. They've got a new young owner over there. Track is ridiculous. Just really, really phenomenal day today. But the point of my story is they gave me a tour, and they have a Joel, help me out here. When you have a kid and you want to drop a kid off, and I, with all due respect, kid, you have a child and you want to drop a child off daycare. Sorry. So they've created a daycare area. Now, I'm sure there's people out there listening right now that don't play golf, have no desire to, or never been a part of a club or a membership of a golf course, or that is unheard of. That is unheard of. You know, golf courses just don't have that. A daycare center so that, a father can come and get in 9 holes or get in 18 holes. But this is what we're living with right now. There is the possibility that with COVID-19 on the rise, again, I was sitting here prepping for the show, and every now and then I try not to watch too much because I get so depressed, but 39 states on the rise in regard to COVID-19. There's a chance it might swoop back around, come back and hit New York and New Jersey. People keep on flooding in here because they're looking at this as, oh, I got to get back to New York and New Jersey. That's the safest part of the area of the country right now. Might come back. And we might not have schools, might not be open. Just thought I'd share that with you. Just, you know, it's a new way of thinking, new way of doing things. And I'm sure, again, like, you know, we sometimes forget athletes are people, too, with families and children and wives and husbands. And it's a lot. It's a lot for us. It's a lot for them.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All the way from our nation's capital, a lot going on there, Bram. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing all right. You know, yeah, these are the type of stories we like talking about, but here we are.
I know. So, here's the thing. It's great that I get to hear your voice twice in less than a week. I mean, you know, we had you on talking about the potential new nickname for the Washington team. Now this, the Washington Post article that dropped around 5:30 this evening. You know, one thing I've been talking about on the show, Bram, is that this is an article that a number of us in the media have been anticipating for the last 24 to 48 hours, with some really damaging information and damaging reports within it. And it drops, and not to take anything, it's horrific. It's disgusting. It's what the Post is reporting in regards to Dan Snyder and this organization is, it's, you know, you want to vomit, but not as damaging as I think a lot of us have anticipated. Agree with that?
The speculation was ridiculous.
Right.
You know, it was. And you and I privately talked about that. And I think I even told you, I said, I really just can't say anything at this point because, like, a lot of the stuff that was happening, at least on Twitter, and it people's minds got away from them and it became preposterous. And there were things that were being written that were straight out of movies. And then, you know, it went to almost lampoonish, like they're paying off referees. They've had a winning record 2 years in a row, like once in the last 30 years. So if they're paying off referees, it's preposterous, you know, like it's ridiculous. And then there were some of the other things that kind of fall in line with what we learned today about the cultural, you know, issues within the organization that went to like Jeffrey Epstein depths. And I hate using the word relieved because this is not good news. What came out today, it's bad. But it is not what people were suggesting it was. And, you know, we're in a very different time. Like, people wanted to rush the Washington Post to put out a story because it got out, you know, that they had a story, and then everyone ran with it and decided to come up with fantasies about all these different characters that were involved in it. And as it turns out, this thing falls in line with what came out, I don't know, a few years ago during the Me Too movement, where pervasive cultures of sexual harassment are infiltrating certain office spaces. It's not being accounted for. And this feels like 2017 to me. And honestly, after reading this, part of me was kind of like, I can't believe that they didn't fall under the wave of the workplace environment changes that occurred then, and how this existed for a few more years. But here we are.
Yes, here we are. Now, you know, I find it interesting. Dan Snyder hires Beth Wilkinson, right? Am I pronouncing that properly? LLC, an attorney, to come in and evaluate the organization, clean it up. Let's call her the Wolf, right? Like, is she?
Sounds about right.
Probably one of my favorite, characters from Pulp Fiction. Let's call the Wolf the cleaner. He comes in, he cleans, right? So she's going to come in. So to me, that hire in that association is Dan Snyder. Optics is everything. Trying to get ahead of the situation. agree to that?
Yeah, yeah, no, they are. And look, so you know how this works. The reason why this story took so long to come out is because lawyers were vetting it. And, you know, I would just say this, in the atmosphere that we have where the media is consistently attacked and called fake and things like that, you should applaud the Washington Post for not putting something out as quickly as humanly possible for the sake of being pressured to do so because people found out that they did. And it does not behoove them to hold anything, because once it leaked out they had some big story, every person in media, let alone sports media, is now trying to figure out what that is. And if they somehow can vet out sources quicker, they'll put it out quicker and trump whatever the Post has. So they were trying to move as quickly as they possibly could. The holdup obviously was lawyers, probably on the side of the paper and certainly on the side of the team, to determine what is proper to print here, because you don't want to lose your livelihood over making a mistake because you are taking down people's lives. And so I appreciate that the Post took their time. I know it didn't happen as fast as everybody wants it to, but not everything is Twitter. Like, journalistic integrity does still matter, and the Washington Post is an institution that still believes in it, and they vet stories, and they wait to put something out until they think it's right.
Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. There's some talk and speculation, Bram, again, that, you know, that And I'm with you. Like I hate to say it, like, that, you know, this report or this story, or these accusations weren't as damaging or you know, as appalling, because I think there's a lot of people out there. Let's be honest, Bram. They want Dan out, right? They want Dan. They want the other 31 owners, 31 plus owners, to force Dan to sell the team. Is this going to do it? I compare this report to, like, what we saw happen with Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks, right? Like, I don't see this report being that damaging, where the other where the NFL owners are going to be like, Dan, you've got to go.
So, like, I don't know what step we are in that process, but so go back a couple of weeks before they actually put out a statement saying they'll evaluate the name and they're going to change it, which is, Dan Snyder doesn't speak to the media very often. In fact, it's quite rare. But on one issue that he did and was vehement about, was he's never changing the name. This is the issue he's going to die on the hill for. And clearly public pressure and financial pressure from the sponsors and the NFL itself, because times have changed, have forced him to do this. He didn't want to do it. Go read the statement that he put out the other day that's got the name in it 8 times. You know, like it's the most passive-aggressive, we don't want to do this moment. So he didn't want to do it, never wanted to do it. But it started with FedEx putting out a statement saying, we've told them to change the name. And FedEx's CEO, Fred Smith, is a minority owner in the team. Have you ever heard of anything like that, where a minority owner in his own brand and franchise would do something that might financially damage it? That's insane, right? Then all of a sudden the reporting comes out that the other two minority owners, and collectively they own 40% of the team, all want out. And then it comes out that they've asked, maybe nicely or not so nicely, that Dan might think about selling them their 60% or finding a new seller. And apparently he said no. And then it comes out, you know, it's drips and drabs. And this reads to me like this could be coincidence. Sure, this story could easily be coincidence. This could have been vetted and sourced for a long time, right? This all feels like that could be happening. But just think of the timeline here, that now a week later, it does feel like there is levers being pulled to say, you could either sell this and walk away quietly, or we're going to make life very difficult for you. And it does feel like a coup or a corporate takeover. And it's ugly now, because now we're talking about people's careers and livelihoods. And, you know, frankly, I think what most people thought, and what I thought was going to happen, was you were going to see a literal finger pointing at Dan Snyder is the figurehead of a corporate organizational sexual harassment atmosphere, and something needs to be done about it. But like your point about Mark Cuban, nobody pointed the finger at Mark Cuban. They pointed the finger at the department heads that were responsible for it and allowed him to wash his hands and basically say, I knew nothing of it. And while this doesn't exactly do that, and it doesn't totally absolve him of it, it also does not literally say that he harassed anybody, that he made life uncomfortable for women in his environment. But he, what they are suggesting is he probably knew about it and didn't necessarily do anything about it. And is that equate to, you know, what we're talking about here, which is ousting of him as the owner? I don't know the answer to that. And I think the speculation began to grow and grow and grow. One, on your point of wishful thinking, there are a lot of people that don't want him to be the owner any longer. And two, we're seeing this pattern of things that are really demeaning the brand of the team so much so that it's almost like they're trying to shame him out of ownership and selling. And whether he's willing to do that, I don't know.
Bram, do you think that there's going to be more information that is going to be released by the Post, or do you think this is it?
I don't know the answer to that. You know, like, I really don't. I don't know what they know. I was, frankly, expecting a little bit more pointing at the top of the organization, Dan, potentially, you know, the former president, Bruce Allen, but that did not happen. That also, you know, that's probably unfair to say because, you know, I just watching this pattern, seeing what's happening and having worked with the organization very closely for a long time, it's a small group of people. Like, I did kind of expect a little bit more of the target to be faced directly at the owner. The fact that it didn't, you know, could be read many different ways. Like, maybe there is more and maybe there's just not. And so I really don't know the answer to that. I do know that this story was at least felt like it was going to come out a few days ago. Something happened to hold it back. My guess is vetting and lawyers talking about what could and could not be printed without fear of libel and those types of issues. And this is what the Post was comfortable printing, and only they know the answer to that.
Will be interesting to see how this all really plays out. Bram, any final thoughts? Anything that you're expecting moving forward? What's the next step? Is NFL going to investigate this? Like you know, what's next in this story?
Well, I mean, I think they have to. I mean, the FBI is involved, so you know, because it's a lot of people that are making very similar accusations, most of which did not put their name on it. So the NFL obviously is going to work in coordination with law enforcement officials to try to figure out best next steps forward, clearly. And then I would think that they would do their own internal investigation to find out what they think about what's happening organizationally. You know, they did relieve three people of their duties this week. The other two that were named in it have already left the organization, and one famously was part of a situation with the cheerleaders that's not worth revisiting, but is equally gross. So, you know, their organization is, I think the best way to say it right now is it's kind of Ron Rivera and about three other people. And so they are short on manpower from organizational development, and, you know, maybe this year turns into a complete rebrand of literally everything. I mean, this whole thing is being turned upside down, and considering their name is changing, maybe the time was right for it.
Bram, thanks so much for spending time with us this evening. I know it's late. I'm sure you're on overdrive right now and will be for the next few days. So please know how much I do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, see ya.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Thank God somebody feels good right now, and that's Jacob DeGrom. Rich Catino joins us to give us our Mets update. Rich, how you doing tonight?
Good, Anita. How are you tonight?
All things considered, I'm doing all right. I had a nice round of golf today. Played a little teed it up at Forest Hills in Clifton, New Jersey. Course is looking magnificent. So I was really thrilled about that, and now I'm here talking Mets with you. So life's good, Rich.
Yeah, and, you know, we're starting to get back into the swing of things. The last week they've had a couple of night intra-squad games, trying to get my schedule back up to snuff because there are more night games than day games in a baseball season, and getting the hours that you get to the ballpark and just getting into the hop of things, so to speak. But we just had a conference call with Luis Rojas, and he said that Jacob DeGrom felt better after the, you know, treatments that he received. Now, obviously, the MRI came back clean earlier in the morning, and he did have a game of catch, is what he called it, and he felt fine from that. So I think the next step is to him to come in tomorrow, see where the treatments do in the morning tomorrow. And I think if all goes well, if I was reading between the lines of Luis Rojas, he will try to throw a bullpen tomorrow. And he was supposed to start over the weekend against the Yankees. I don't know if that's going to happen, but, you know, he said he's intending on pitching opening day, but of course Luis Rojas has to make that final decision along with the, you know, Brody Van Wagenen and the rest of the Mets baseball advisors. And, you know, the funny thing about this, Anita, is in a 162-game season, you wouldn't really care much if he missed the opener because he's going to have 30-some-odd more starts. But in a 60-game season, when you're playing a divisional opponent, and that divisional opponent, maybe they're not the world champions, but they're the reigning NL East champions, the Atlanta Braves, you want to get off to a good start, so but you don't want to push the envelope too much. This could be a tough decision for the Mets, but I think they're leaning towards him trying to go to bullpen this weekend or even pitch an inning or so in the Yankee exhibition tilts, one of them either the one Saturday here in Queens or the one Sunday in the Bronx, and then see if he would be all set up for the Friday, late afternoon home opener against the Braves a week from tomorrow. So we'll just have to see how it goes, but it was a good day in terms of the MRI and the playing catch. That's the way Luis Rojas termed it.
Rich Catino joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You know, Rich, if you can, kind of, you know, explain in more detail, like, the significance of starting pitching in bullpen as well this season as it relates to having only a 60-game season, you know, just so, and the reason being is, you know, God forbid this back injury turns out to be something worse, just how much more devastating that injury will be in a 60-game season as opposed to a normal one.
Well, first of all, we're talking about the best pitcher in the game of baseball in Jacob DeGrom. And secondly, it slots everyone up higher in the rotation than they normally would be slotted. It would put a Marcus Stroman or a Steven Matz in the top part of the rotation. Now, what do you do with that fifth spot in the rotation? I know the Mets, you know, think they have a better bullpen than last year, but part of that is one of the guys that pitched really well in that bullpen, Seth Lugo, is out there. You could think about him maybe coming in the rotation, but in a 60-game season, you have to have time to stretch someone out. If they were preparing to be a bullpen pitcher and all of a sudden now they're going to be a starter, you know, in a 160-game season, you have 2 or 3 weeks to stretch them out. 2 or 3 weeks in a 60-game season is almost a third of the season. So that's a big problem. As far as the bullpen's concerned, I think you have to have reliable people that not only could pitch at the end of games, but you may want to throw an opener there to pitch the first 2 innings of a game to give yourself flexibility in the bullpen. You got to make sure that your bullpen pitchers can go successive days, multiple innings in a day, and then maybe a day off and multiple innings a third day. And these are all the things that in this short summer camp, you have to kind of make sure that it's coming to fruition. And the other problem with the DeGrom thing is when you have back stiffness, you know, as a pitcher, you have a tendency to kind of compensate. You don't want him doing something to his arm, short-arming the ball. And when you look at Jacob DeGrom's delivery, Anita, he's a big, tall guy, and his closeness to the plate is a big part of it. And a big part of that is his back extension when he's lifting off the pitching rubber in the windup. And if he can't do that, it could limit his effectiveness. So I think they have to be sure that the back stiffness is, you know, going to go away with treatment. And he's got to test all his pitches. Now, the question is he going to do that in a bullpen or is he going to do that in an exhibition tilt against the Yankees? But Jacob DeGrom missing from a rotation for any period of time in a 60-game season is as devastating to the Mets as it would be if Mike Trout missed 20 games for the Angels.
Wow.
That's the importance that I give it to. You're talking about the guy who's back-to-back Cy Young Award winner, best pitcher in baseball. I know some people think he's not the best pitcher in New York. I think that's a bunch of tomfoolery. But in any event, he is one of the top three pitchers in all of baseball at the very least, and you're not going to not feel it if he's not there for any length of time in a 60-game season.
Rich, you know, talk about what Mets fans can expect in regard to the bullpen and the closer situation and how, you know, how those pitchers are going to be used this season.
You know, I've asked Luis this question two or three times in the summer camp. Is he a fan of the guy that just is the closer, or is he more of a closer by committee? And he really didn't give me an answer. He said it depends on the matchups, and he gave me all that kind of malarkey with the answer. But to me, the interesting thing about this Met bullpen is you got four guys, and they all have closed in their careers. You have Seth Lugo, who closed last year for the Mets. Familia, who closed a couple of years ago for the Mets. Edwin Diaz, who we know closed with Seattle before he got here and closed last year for the Mets. And now you have Dellin Betances, who also at times, when the Yankees needed him, closed games and did it very effectively. I think the addition of Betances is key for the Mets, because ideally I think he could be the best setup man in all of baseball if he's used right, if his innings are taken to you take a look at his innings closely and manage it. He's proven that. He's not only proven he's the best eighth inning guy in baseball, he's proven that by trips to the All-Star game, what other managers feel about him. So in spring training, when I saw him, the fastball wasn't really where I thought it should be. It wasn't in the mid-90s. It was in the high 80s, low 90s. I've seen a totally different fastball from him in this summer camp. So that's a great sign for the Mets. I think early in the season, the bullpen's going to be big, because pitchers are going to be asked, you know, starting pitchers are going to go five or six innings. So you're going to have to get four or five innings out of your bullpen every night, at least I would say for the first 10 odd games of the season. And they have Seth Lugo, they have Familia, they have Diaz, they have Justin Wilson, and they have Betances. To me, those are five relief pitchers that are all good. Now, some of them are coming off injuries or bad years. And people say to me, well, what does the Met bullpen have to do to succeed? And you know, I think of Diaz, Familia, and Betances. They need to have two of those three rebound to what they're capable of doing. They don't necessarily need to have all three do it, but they need two. And they can't live with just one of them, not in a 60-game season like we have now. So to me, if the trio of Betances, Diaz, and Familia, if they get one or two of those guys to return to form, they have Seth Lugo, who they have a lot of confidence in. Justin Wilson, who did some really underrated things in the Met bullpen last year when the Mets had that good second half where they almost got back in the wild card race. So I think they have some depth there. I think they have some options there. I think the Met bullpen is going to be a good bullpen. I think if two of those three guys I mentioned return to form, it could be a great bullpen. But if one of them does, I think it'll be a good bullpen and one of the better bullpens of the National League East, which the Mets are going to be facing a lot of games in their own division in the National League East. So I think it's a better bullpen than it was last year. There's no question about that in my mind. The question is how much better? Like I said, if two of those three players return to form, and particularly Diaz, who I think has great stuff, but I just think something was from the neck up wasn't working with him last year. He threw his slider much too often. His fastball is his best pitch. He could throw past anyone in the National League. And he tried to establish his slider first in appearances, and I didn't see the reason for that. Establish the fastball first, then let the slider work off the fastball. And I think those are the things Jeremy Hefner, the new pitching coach, is working with him. I talked to Jeurys Familia, and he said to me that he's worked on a lot of things with his slider. He felt like he wasn't getting the proper extension last year. So there's a lot of technical things that Jeremy Hefner and the Met coaching staff are trying to do with these two bullpen pitchers, and also with Betances, being as though he had a shortened season last year. And they're hoping for good things. And like I said, that trio is going to maybe dictate how the Met season goes, never mind how the Met bullpen is.
Wow, great stuff. Really quick, before I let you go, I was just looking at the time. I have time for this question. In regard to Robinson Cano, from what I understand, the reports are that he had some personal issues as to what's going on and his time away from the team. But what can Mets fans expect from Cano as well as Cespedes coming into the season? Will they be ready once the season starts?
Both are in super physical condition. I know that. Both of them worked out a lot in the offseason. Cespedes really worked out trying to get back into his world of being the Met cleanup hitter. I think in it all comes down now to reps. Not only the reps they get in the batting cage, but the reps they get in games. And they have to see curveballs and fastball counts and all the things that you see during a season. I don't know how much of that they've seen. I think Cespedes has seen a lot more of it than Cano. I think there's a chance Cano may not be in the opening day lineup only because he's not ready. I don't think there's any question in my mind. Cespedes will definitely be in the opening day lineup. And look, when you add his bat to a lineup that already has Michael Conforto, who had 30 home runs last year, McNeil and Nimmo at the head of the order, and Pete Alonso, the 53 home run man, J.D. Davis, Ahmed Rosario, and by the way, Wilson Ramos, who had more RBIs than anyone in the National League at the catching position last year. This is a lineup that could do great things. It could also be one of the better lineups in franchise history, the way it's set up. Now, everyone has to stay healthy, and everyone has to stay prepared. But I think Cespedes is ready. I'm not so sure about Cano. I have to see more of him. But if opening day was tomorrow, I think Cespedes will be ready to bat cleanup in the DH spot.
Rich, thank you so much for your Mets update tonight. Really do appreciate your time. Glad you're safe and healthy, and thanks for joining us on 98.7 ESPN.
I'm sure we'll talk real soon. Have a great show. Anita, always great talking to you.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.